Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
Blah, 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 blah. We'll just start there. Yes, brain, it's work early, for us today. Early. Totally, it's not even that early. All right.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in beautiful Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug is an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, and it is one of the oldest independent publications in the entire United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, we're talking all about the River District. We've done it before. We're doing it again. So much going on out there. We're going to talk about the West Side Business Alliance. We're going to talk to Yelp Utah about the best places to eat near. Area, and we're going to talk about Sugar Space and their new locale over there. NeighborWorks is a private nonprofit right here in Salt Lake City that's focused on revitalizing neighborhoods and creating affordable housing opportunities throughout the Salt Lake Valley. It was founded in 1977, and much of its attention is focused on the metro area, specifically on the west side from 1000 North to 1700 South and from 300 West to Redwood Road. The group partners with organizations like eHome America, YouthWorks, and the West Side Leadership Institute to build up areas like the Fair Park, Glendale, Rose Park, and West Capitol Hill, and create more vibrant, thriving neighborhoods. Slug writer Ben Trentelman sat down with the executive director, Maria Garcias, to talk about the nonprofit and the work they're doing today.
What can you tell me about NeighborWorks and what you do there?
Well, NeighborWorks turns 36 years old in November, and we were created initially in 1977 to respond to the issue of redlining, where banks were actually drawing lines around neighborhoods and not lending in those neighborhoods. And so a group of residents came together with the local government and private sector and created this nonprofit that focuses on building community.
That's fantastic. What communities do you work in, and why do you think you focus on those specific areas?
Well, we started out in the East Liberty Park neighborhood. We were there from 77 to about 1981, and then we moved to Poplar Grove neighborhood in 1982, and since then have expanded from Glendale to Rose Park area. So now working in seven neighborhoods in Salt Lake City's west side.
It's interesting that you started out in the East Liberty Park area, because I think we have our ideas of where this type of work is needed, and right now the way that the East Liberty Park area functions, I think that people have a different idea of that. Can you tell me a little bit about why there was a need in the East Liberty Park area there?
Sure. In 1977 to about 1982, there was a huge glut of issues with savings and loan banks. Mm. And so a lot of homes were abandoned, and so they were boarded up, they became blighted. And as a result, Salt Lake City needed to work with an organization that would help turn that around. So we moved into that community, worked with residents, purchased some of those homes, did home improvement loans, did weatherization, and now you see East Liberty Park area is very successful. 9th and 9th is run by a group of residents who helped to create the organization way back then.
That's excellent. That's really exciting to hear, especially thinking about everything that is growing on the West Side and all the positive growth and development that we're seeing there, and the fact that I've lived in Salt Lake for a number of years now and never would have assumed that at least East Liberty area was once like that. And
that's
I'm sure
right.
That, you know, I hope that a decade from now or so that it's similar for a lot of these West Side neighborhoods. So NeighborWorks has been around for over 30 years. How would you say that the housing climate has changed in that time? What is it like now, and how have the West Side communities changed?
When we first moved into Salt Lake City's West Side neighborhoods, before we moved into the West Side neighborhood, the residents were concerned about just going into the neighborhood and doing bricks and mortar. They wanted us to really work with the issues that were there. So at that time, there was an emerging gang problem in 82, and so we created a program that engages young people, you know, in the neighborhoods to help us build housing. So they became part of the solution instead of part of the problem. And so what we've seen with housing, the other issue that residents said is we have our share of affordable housing. We want to see more market rate housing. So can you do market rate housing?
Mm-hmm.
So we started to build, working with younger families, working with senior citizens who wanted to sell their home to us and move into senior housing. So we worked with organizations to build senior housing. So it's really whatever the neighborhood needs is what we respond to.
So what does NeighborWorks do to help people actually get into those homes?
Well, we provide very low interest rate mortgages. And so if people are interested in learning about that, I always say your first step is come in and talk to us about it, right? So traditionally, our interest rates are below what the bank would offer you. And if you have credit issues, credit problems, we all do at one point in our life, we'll really talk to you about those and help you fix those up and then go through the process of learning how to buy a home. Because we want you, when you buy your home, to be very educated. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to experience what a lot of people did 5 years ago, where they had very bad loans, 10%, 12% loans. Mm-hmm. No one should be paying that kind of money for a home.
Definitely.
So for us, it's most important that people understand how to buy a home.
Why is there a push to get people to buy homes, and how does that compare to renting a home? What are the benefits?
First is the mortgage interest, right, mm-hmm. during tax time, which is a wonderful opportunity. But I think the other part is when you own your home, it's your first investment in yourself, right? It's your greatest form of wealth is your home, because it builds equity over the years. And so I think that's the first and most important. The other is it creates stability. Home ownership creates stability for neighborhoods. When you're a renter, you're paying rent. You're paying somebody else's mortgage mm-hmm. versus your own mortgage, and often you'll find that it's a $100 or $200 difference between paying rent and paying mortgage, especially now with interest rates so low.
For us in our home, we're only paying about $100 more than we were to rent a duplex, and now we have a house on the west side, and so it seems like a pretty clear decision to be made on my part, but there are still some people that are a little nervous about it.
And rightly so, because when you own your home, right, you have to cut the lawn, you have to fix the plumbing, and when you're a renter, if you have a good landlord, they'll do that for you.
Yeah.
If you don't have a good landlord, they mm-hmm. won't do that for you. But, you know, home ownership is really an investment in yourself and in your community.
Talking a little bit about the West Side, what do you think NeighborWorks is doing to really help to combat the negative stigma that some people have with the West Side? And do you think that stigma is justified?
It's difficult to say because I'm mm-hmm. I'm a West Sider, right?
Yeah.
I grew up in the West Side, and I think I was sharing with you earlier that I have a neighbor, and she told me the greatest thing about being a West Sider is defending her neighbor. Mm-hmm. And always, right? If you live in the West yep. Side, you're always, people are concerned about crime and, you know, issues like that. But if you look at the data, right, mm-hmm. you know, the West Side has no more crime than Sugar House. I hope the folks from Sugar House don't call me and yell at me. But if you look at the data and we hear the police reports, I really think the perception of the West Side came from 30, 40 years ago because of a very blue-collar community, and that's mm-hmm. where the diverse communities lived. And there's an assumption many times that people of color are criminals or very low income, those types of things. So I think that's been reinforced. Is it justified? Absolutely not. But it's a stigma that has, you know, stayed with the West Side for a long, long time. And so part of what our organization is trying to do is really look at the housing and build quality housing, engaging young people who people think might get involved in gangs and getting them involved in education. We have a formal resident leadership program called West Side Leadership Institute, where we have 288 graduates. So these are residents who get involved in a 12-week course, and they graduate with university credit and go out and do some amazing things, like create nonprofits to deal with the children that have autism, mm-hmm. creating farmers markets. So that's really starting to transition and challenge that whole image of, you know, who lives on the West Side, like yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right? Exactly. My favorite question is, what is that like? As soon as you say that you live on the West Side, like, they're expecting you to just, oh, it's so terrible, let me just tell you about it. But really, I mean, I have more horror stories from, I used to live a block away from Liberty Park, and we saw all kinds of crazy stuff going on over there. I lived in Sugar House, and we'd go out our front door in the morning and see that every car down the entire block had a window busted out and had something stolen from it. Every car going down the block. And I've never seen anything like that where we live. And then people will combat that by saying, well, it's because the people from the West Side go over into the East Side neighborhoods to steal the stuff, because they know that that's where all the nice stuff is. And I'm like, no, I don't think that that's really the case.
I think what's unique about the West Side, at least, you know, in my lifetime, having lived and worked there most of my life, is that there's this sense of community, right? You know who your neighbors are. Now, I lived in suburbia for 1 year, mm-hmm. and I told my husband, I'm like, dude, mm-hmm. I have to go back to the city. I am a city girl. I have to go back. I cannot live in Sandy. And that year that I lived in Sandy, I knew none of my neighbors. None. And so one of the things that I've learned, when we sell a home to a first-time home buyer, the neighbors really come out and welcome them. The other thing that I see is I see people that come from outside of Utah who say, where are the diverse communities at? Mm-hmm. You know, where are the mixed income communities, meaning that there are incomes from all levels, and where are the diverse populations, and that's where people from outside of Utah are coming,
exactly,
to the West Side. So those are some of the changing dynamics that I'm starting to see. I think the other opportunity in terms of the West Side is if you start at 300 West, mm-hmm, right, and you move west from there,
yeah,
the difference between affordable housing and not is about $100,000 the,
yes,
minute you move up into the avenues,
mm-hmm,
right? Same type of housing, bigger lots.
Exactly.
Actually, you know, property lines are separate and not right next to each other. So, you know, the affordability is quite amazing. And people, because they can't get past the stigma, end up shortchanging themselves.
Can you tell me a little bit about your community-based economic development? Is there room for growth in the communities that you serve?
Absolutely. So the community-based economic development is really about working with small businesses to build their capacity so they can better serve the community. The West Side is really growing the fastest in terms of the city, but what it still lacks are the businesses that will meet their needs,
mm-hmm,
right? And so you see a lot of mom and pops that entrepreneurial, you know, a lot of diverse communities are very entrepreneurial, but they go into a business not without a business plan,
mm-hmm,
without support from banks, sometimes with their own money, so they don't stay open for very long. So we're trying to really work with them and educate them with them. But we're also trying to work with some of the bigger businesses like Smith's to say, can you do this with your landscaping? So we have a really nice Smith's in the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
And when Rancho moved into 9th West when Viva's left,
yes,
he said, can you keep your parking lot maintained?
Nice.
Those types of things. So really trying to work with the businesses to have a sense of community and pride, because we do as residents, right? So we want the businesses to also.
Definitely, which is tremendous. And there is a really noticeable difference when you go to the Smith's that is on 600 North versus when you go to the one that is on 9th South or 8th South.
The avenues.
You know,
right?
Or the avenues. They're completely different stores, a completely different atmosphere. When I will go into those stores that I used to live right by and took it for granted, it's like, where am I? What mythical grocery store is this, you,
yeah,
know? And they have fresh sushi here. And yeah, you do feel a little shortchanged,
yeah,
with the neighborhood that we live in. And it's like, this is a community that's just as good as any other. And so why don't we have nice Smiths too? But we have a great love for our Smiths and all the people that
well,
work
and,
there.
And we
developed that relationship.
But I think that's the other challenge with the whole image is that sometimes bigger business think that because it's a very diverse community that the income is not there to support it.
Yeah.
That's not true.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So. There's been a good deal of transition in the West Side with things like the redevelopment on North Temple and the new tracks line and rebranding the River District. Is there more change on the horizon, and how are community members responding to this?
Well, I think the River District name is, and you've heard the history in terms of how it just sort of caught on and a lot of,
mm-hmm,
different people are using it. And
yeah,
some people are very excited about it, others are not excited about,
okay,
it, you know. And I think we're trying to work through that. The businesses are very excited about it. Businesses on North Temple are like, the River District, now we have an identity.
Yeah.
Because when you talk North Temple is the airport all the way to the university,
yes,
right? But when you say River District, we know it's close to the Jordan River. And, you know, the West Side's one of their greatest assets is the Jordan River,
it
right?
It really is.
And we get it, and, mm-hmm, the state is starting to understand it, and so is the county. And so the River District name is a way to brand North Temple, and there's all these opportunities and, you know, all these investors that are starting to look at North Temple. I think our job is to make sure that there's equitable development there so that it doesn't become all high-rise and,
yeah,
all not affordable. We want to make sure that the businesses that move into the area are businesses that feed the residents in that area. So over the next decade, a lot of changes.
Excellent. It's exciting to see, and it has been an untapped resource. I remember first kind of discovering the Jordan River Parkway for myself as this great, big, you know, beautiful pathway that just seems to go on forever.
Isn't it great?
You know, and only knowing the reputation alone, where before people would kind of talk about it like it was a body depository in Salt Lake City. It's
yeah,
like, oh, they found a body in the Jordan River Parkway, and it's like, well, okay, you know, but then you go down there and it's absolutely beautiful.
It is so beautiful.
Yeah.
I have a 17-member volunteer board, and I think it was last year or the year before, for one of our retreats, I had them canoe.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, this is unbelievable,
really,
that this is.
Is
right in the middle of the,
mm-hmm,
city. So.
Exactly, and it's still, even for that, is way underutilized. We've got a friend who get some canoes about once a year, and we'll all go out on a just to float the river. And we were going through, and it was late fall, and he said, "You're the first ones I've seen come through this year." And there was some guy whose house was just off the bank of the river. Yeah. We were like, "Really? We're the first group that you've actually noticed out here? This should be teeming with people coming down here, you know. Not we want to keep it personal, but definitely more than that."
Well, and I'm amazed that the outdoor retailers have not picked up on that.
Yeah.
And one of the activities that we're trying to work with several partners is to figure out how we can do a canoe drop where, you know how you have the bike drops?
Yeah.
Where you have canoes starting at Raging Waters or Seven Peaks, I think it's called now, and you can end up at Cottonwood Park or at Fisher Mansion and then lock it up and turn in a key and then
exactly, you know,
keep doing that, because it's difficult if you don't have your own canoe to do that. But once people canoe down the Jordan River, you know, in the city, it's a wonderful experience.
Exactly. It's beautiful. It's one of the greatest experiences that I'm able to have in our community, for sure, that I really appreciate. What are some other organizations that you think are doing good work in the West Side as well?
Well, I think certainly, you know, the Boys and Girls Club, they do great work. University Neighborhood Partners is doing some wonderful things. International Refugee Center. So there are a lot of organizations doing a lot of good things. We're all working together to make sure that we're leveraging what little resources we have as nonprofits.
For more information on the program and how to get involved, visit them online at northwestsaltlake.org. And that's nwsaltlake.org. Lee Anarchist are a six-piece indie folk band from Salt Lake City that originally formed in mid-2011. They released their debut LP in December of that year, earning them some national airplay on places like NPR. In 2013, the band won the City Weekly Music Awards competition, and they capitalized on that success by releasing a sophomore EP called The Traveler just this August. This is a song called Juno off of The Traveler EP.
I found my in a sea of lead and felt the waves crashing overhead. Like a raging fire, and it filled my lungs with a muted choir. I wanted a witness for all that I've done. Whatever happened to what's gone and sung, I wanted forgiveness.
To download the new EP, check them out at leeanarchiste.bandcamp.com. And for more information on the band and upcoming shows, visit them online at facebook.com/leeanarchistemusic. Okay, once again, we welcome Jeffrey Stebbin from Yelp, Utah, here into our lovely Soundwave studio, and we're going to delve into the River District food scene to go along with the whole theme of the episode. Jeffrey, welcome.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming in.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me here. This was a really, really fun one to talk about. Elsewhere, I'm sure you've described what the River District is.
Indeed.
But from a food point of view, the River District is the great melting pot of Salt Lake City, with the heavy emphasis. There's a lot, whatever we're melting inside of that pot, a lot of it comes from Mexico.
Yep.
In the River
District.
I love
all of that good stuff.
Yeah, which is great. No, which is absolutely
great. This will be a great way to discover a whole bunch of new places that are just like a hop and a skip from downtown where we're currently recording.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Bonus.
Well, there are some obvious choices. In fact, the most reviewed place on Yelp in Utah is found in the River District. Of course, I'm talking about Red Iguana.
Nice.
Which is 4.5 out of 5 stars, 741 reviews.
Oh,
go add your voice. It's funny, that this as a side note, people are like, after 740 reviews, what the heck am I review going to do? Well, on Yelp, you have friends, and you can follow people, and so when I read reviews of Red Iguana, it's all my friends' stuff come up first, so
oh, nice.
I know what they've been eating, I know what they order, I trust them. So anyway,
nice.
That's just a side note. Red Iguana 2 has 189 reviews, also 4.5 stars, so I'm going to spend time on those. We know about those. If you don't know about Red Iguana, you're... pull yourself together.
Yeah.
But I do want to talk about, first, some of the other Mexican restaurants that are out there. I'm going to talk about two that are more well-known, and then one that is less well-known, but it's come up a lot in the last couple of months for me, so I'll give it a shout-out. First of all, we're going to talk about Julia's.
Mm.
Julia's, 51 South, 10th West, 4 out of 5 after 17 reviews. Katie H. gives a shout-out to the salsa. Says, best salsa I've ever had, ever had at a restaurant, ever.
Ever.
Period. The only place you're supposed to get salsa like this is at home, or so I thought, like, wow. Be warned, if you don't love spice, it is very spicy. As a side note, they will turn up the spice if you want them to. But
all
she
right.
says it's not stupid hot, it's flavorful hot. And she also wrecks the goat soup. So go get you some goat soup from Julia's.
All right.
Second one, I think much more well-known than Julia's is Chunga's. 4 out of 5 after an even 100 reviews. That's 180 South, 9th West. Aaron S. says, I don't know whether to be proud or embarrassed that I've only lived in the neighborhood 2 weeks, and the staff at Chunga's already knows me by name. It's just so good. I can't stop going back. You must try the tacos al pastor. By and large, that's the most shouted out item over
really?
At Chunga's is the tacos al pastor.
All right. It's good to have a signature item.
Yeah, a little sweetness, a little pineapple-y goodness.
Mm.
Yeah, tacos al pastor. And then the one that maybe y'all haven't heard of is El Maguey. M-A-G-U-E-Y.
Mm.
Greg L. says, excellent street tacos. With the ability to be inside an air-conditioned and heated environment and sit down at a table. Parenthetically, again, I just... So every week I write this newsletter about different stuff. And several weeks ago, I picked a topic that was called Yelp Puts the Taco Before the Cart. Meaning where to get great cart tacos.
Yeah.
Not from a cart.
Not in a cart.
Because winter is coming and, like... Taco carts are great for a second, and then you freeze. So
that's right.
This would be a great replacement. 705 South, 9th West. Mm. Only 4 reviews, but 4 out of 5 stars. Summarizing, his wife loves the ceviche. His father-in-law gets the caldo. And then he says, mix it up. Take someone on their first date here, and you'll be rewarded with a nice, clean, safe place to eat. Ha-ha! You thought he was being a jerk.
But no.
No, it's, recently remodeled. You'll be doubly rewarded, he says, with good food from some good people.
And there's lots of great places along that 9th West stretch. Through Salt Lake and just west of downtown. I mean,
yeah,
that's a good recommend. Mm.
Yeah, and it's all different kind of stuff. So I'm going to throw out some names. You can research these. You can go check them out for Mexican places over here. Nico's, Sergio's, Elfo's, Taqueria El De De Oros, Archie's Burgers, does a little Mexican burger thing.
Whoa,
going on.
All right.
So that we're going to leave Mexican behind and move on to other cuisines.
More melting pot.
More melting pot. We're going to talk about Charizard Restaurant and Market, 4 out of 5, 9 reviews. That's 1615 West, 21st South. So right along 21st, right at the very south end of the River District,
yeah,
you get some other really good choices. Maria C., this place is amazing. The portions are great. The chicken kebabs are juicy and well-seasoned. And the mountains of Austin basmati rice with sumac are the perfect combination. And then there's a market up front if you want to go after Middle Eastern spices and stuff. Then a deli, Caruso's Deli, 1305 West, 21st South, 4.5 out of 5 after 13 reviews. Nick J. says, Caruso is one of those great finds you want to tell everyone about. Not in a hip location, but it's convenient and worth whatever it takes to get there. Forget those franchise sandwiches and get something bigger, better, and just as affordable. Ooh, I love it. The local
resounding guy. Endorsement.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nick J. knows what he's talking about.
That sounds awesome.
And then finally, I want to talk about one that it's just so different, but it's out there. It's in a strip mall. It's called Pipa. And I'm going with Pipa, even though there's some discussion about how to pronounce it.
Yeah, Pipa sounds right.
Pipa, P-I-P-A. Right. It's like Asian fusion, small plates. It's 118 North, again, 9th West. So 4 out of 5, 52 reviews.
Oh.
Tony L. says, from the moment you enter Pipa, you'll sense that this place is unique and different. Did you just travel in time to visit one of the hottest spots in San Fran and New York City? Cozy dim lights, cool ambiance and music. Uh-huh, the mood is perfect. Did you bring your wife for your date? This place is hip and it's cool. And they do some fun, like, different kind of tapas dishes.
That's exactly what I heard about this place, is that it's got, like, the loungy vibe. Like, a cool lounge place you go for nighttime drinks and some grub and date place, yeah.
Right, in a strip mall.
Right.
In the River District.
That's right. It has it all out there.
That's what I love about this part of town is you're not going to find anything really super, I mean, super polished. Pipa, I think, is maybe the exception where it is this slick kind of lounge. But it's in a strip mall, so it's like this surprise. That's what I love. Get out there. You know, I was surprised going through looking at Yelp stuff to see just how many reviews and how many people live in that neighborhood, know the neighborhood, know what's good, know what's not good. You know, it gives you a heads up as to what's in there. But there's, I mean, East Sea, Pacific Sea, El Sonsonateco in a Salvadorian place.
Yeah,
anything
nice
you want. A lot of divey places with just incredible food for cheap.
That's awesome.
I'm so glad we have the River District in Salt Lake, man, because there's nothing like going into, you know, Julia's or Chunga's and just feeling like, you know, it's not, besides Ritiguana, where a lot of tourists end up, it's really... Right. Like a locals neighborhood.
Well, we get some.
Places.
We get kind of a bum rap for having this sort of, you know, white bread culinary sensibility here in Utah.
Oh, yeah,
you know, and if you go to the River District or up and down Redwood a little bit and find these where all these different nationalities have set up shop and they could get real estate for a decent price and actually open a place, it's amazing what we have out there.
Not a lot of like Applebee's and Olive Garden going on.
No, not at all.
Fine by me.
Awesome. Well, Jeffrey, thank you so much. That is some good advice on the River District. As always, where can we find you out there in the interwebs?
Yeah, head to Yelp.com, download the free app for any kind of smartphone you have. I'm at Yelp Utah on Twitter, at YelpSLC on Instagram, Facebook.com/YelpSLC if you want to hit us up there.
Hell yeah.
That's
everywhere.
It. Find me.
Everywhere.
Come and find me.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
This is your weekly daily calendar for the week starting on September 17th. And as always, you'll want to go to slugmag.com every day of your week to check out all the great events being added all the time up and down the Wasatch Front. When I looked at this week, I found all kinds of goodies. Starting on Tuesday, September 17th, the legendary Pink Dots at Urban Lounge. Talk about bands that have been coming to Utah for decades. These guys are one of those, and they are always a good time live. It's kind of industrial, kind of punky, loud. Bring the earplugs. That should be a great time. The same night, out at the Saltaire, you get the Lumineers, Dr. Dog, and Nathaniel Rateliff. The Lumineers have been blowing up based on that Oh Hey song or whatever. I saw them, and they were decent live, but the real draw here for me is Dr. Dog. They are a great live band. They deserve to be headlining in their own right. On Wednesday, September 18th, and then again on Thursday, Mindy Gledhill is having a CD release party down at Valor in Provo, along with Book on Tapeworm. Those should be two great shows down Provo way. Thursday, September 19th, you also get the Slackers bringing some old-school ska vibes to the complex, while Muse moves on up to the Energy Solutions Arena-sized venues. Those guys have been playing clubs here for years. They have gone full-blown arena rock. It's kind of crazy. Seven Dust, the same night, over it in the venue, bringing the loud hard rock. That should be not a bad show either. On Friday, September 20th, it's Slug Localized with the Weekenders North Valley and the National Parks. That is at the Urban Lounge, and always a great time and always a mere $5. And then Saturday, September 21st, it's a great night to be an old school punk. Guttermouth and Agent Orange are playing at Bird's Tiki Lounge, while over at the Shred Shed, it's the Queers, Teenage Bottle Rocket, the Copyrights, and Problem Daughter. Big night for punks in town. And then Sunday, September 22nd, local lovers will want to go check out Pentagram, Crackers, Low Hum, and The Bully. They're all playing together at Bar Deluxe. Should be a fine Sunday evening. That is it for me this week. As always, go to slugmag.com. Check it out every day. You can even add your own events for free. And for a mere $5 a month or $50 a year, you can add some quality links to your content. Thank you. Lake Island is a three-piece ambient rock band straight out of Provo, Utah. They originally formed in early 2011 and are currently comprised of Steve Richardson, Jared Cisneros, and Kyle Hooper. And on occasion, they'll add other people for their live performances. The group spent most of this year recording their self-released debut EP called Outermost. This is a song called Murmur. The band will hold an album release party at Velour on September 20th, along with Tess Comrie and Desert Noises. The show will be $10 and it starts at 8 p.m. For more information on the band, visit them online at lakeislandmusic.com. The Sugar Space is an independent dance company and a studio that's long been based out of Sugar House. And for years, the space has been home to a lot of small events, all kinds of performances, theatrical productions, dance classes, workshops, you name it. Recently, they started to complete a new phase of expansion into the River District, and they have an open house at their new location, located at 130 South 800 West. Slug senior staff writer Mariah Mellis sat down with founder Brittany Reese to talk about the new space and the company.
You've got some exciting news, some exciting things coming on, a second location, and why don't you tell us a little bit about the news at Sugar Space?
Sure. So yes, after about a year of looking for different spaces, we found this space that has some interesting history that we thought was perfect for expanding Sugar Space to kind of the next level. We've been in business over 5 years, going on six. We've always had really a long-term vision of, you know, completely improving this space constantly. We started out with 1,200 square feet. We expanded to 2,500 square feet. And now, with this new space, we're at 10,000 square feet.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you started out, for the last 5 years, you've been behind the old granite furniture building. Is that correct?
Close, but more, if you know where Dancing Cranes is.
Oh, yes.
We're just north of Dancing Cranes. So it's between 6th and 7th East on Wilmington Avenue. It's a little half street. Stops and starts there. So a little bit further west from the old granite building.
Okay.
Yes, but it's been a great space for us. It's a little odd strip mall type space that nobody thought we could turn into a performance and event space. But luckily, it turned out. It worked out, and I think it's been great.
Oh, that's wonderful. So the second space is 10,000 square feet. If you're to come and take a tour or come by, what can they see?
Well, anybody can call us, email us, and come take a tour anytime. We are not fully operational right now. We have renovated about a third of the space. There are actually three physical buildings and a covered patio on the space. There's a house that's been converted into an art gallery. There is a patio which used to be basically a carport, which we have now lighting and sound out there, and we can put up a stage for patio performances. There's a garage that we have turned into a studio, a 1,200 square foot studio, and then there's a 7,000 square foot warehouse that has yet to be renovated.
Wow, that's a lot of buildings.
Yes.
A lot of ways to use those buildings too.
Right.
That's really fun. What did this place used to be? You said it had kind of a historic and interesting history.
Yeah. So this place was about three generations of a family construction business.
Oh.
So they actually, early 1900s, they lived in the house, they worked in the warehouse, this was their lot. There was the garage, the woodworking, so it has some interesting things in it. There were actually fuel tanks on the facility.
Wow.
That was a huge kind
you
of... we had to dig those
you
up
wow.
before we purchased the property. That was a big kind of detour in our process, which was a kind of a big thing. I learned all about the DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, and how you deal with that. And, you know, so that was pretty interesting. When we got it, it was barbed wire everywhere. They had a safe, big safe. There was a lot of security on the perimeter. It kind of looked like a compound. So we've kind of taken off all the barbed wire, painted it fun colors. You know, there were all the windows were boarded up in the house. We didn't even know there were windows. We started taking off boards, and there's windows. So it's been an adventure.
I bet the neighborhood is so happy to have you there. You know, is it 8th West and 130
yes.
South?
So it actually spans a block. So it goes from 800 West to 840 West, which is called Jeremy Street. I tell people 130 South, 800 West. That's kind of, you'll drive up to the big warehouse, and there's a driveway you can come up into kind of the courtyard. That would probably be the main entrance.
Are there
get
signs
functional.
For people to find
there
it?
Is a small sign right now. You know,
okay.
Since we're not completely fully operational, it's a little bit like, hey, if
there's
you know
any
we're
sign
here.
Painters
yes.
They could totally volunteer.
They should.
Yes.
Anybody could volunteer.
City artists that want to volunteer
oh,
or interested,
sweet.
Please get a hold of Brittany.
You are not kidding.
Love a sign.
You are not kidding. And also, we have this really cool, actually, some cement wall. It doesn't sound very cool, but it's the perfect place for graffiti artists. Yeah.
Yay! Yeah. Oh, that will be so
probably 50, 75 feet long. It's pretty big. Long stretch.
I know that there's a lot of artists that have moved kind of just a little bit west. Mm-hmm. It seems like artists, they're almost like, you know, frontiersmen. They move, they move that border a little bit further. And so I know that when you're looking for a big warehouse space and you're looking for an expensive rent and you know, a chance to be creative and renovate something that, you know, could just be right outside your back door.
Exactly.
The west of your city doors.
It's true. It's true. It's just to, you know, walk a block or two the other way. And, you know, all of a sudden you get, you know, cheaper rents, larger spaces, and it's pretty exciting.
That's great. And you also are neighbors with the Utah Arts Hub. It's not far from you.
Right.
Which is great. And that includes the Urban Arts Gallery. So I've, and I feel like there's going to be a lot of synergy and a lot of partnerships going on here.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of theirs. And Derek, you know, we're good friends and love to commiserate with each other and be like, oh, you're the one person who understands what we're going through.
I feel like you two have very similar missions in providing amazing space for artists to be able to come in.
Yeah.
So similar to kind of that model, just for people who aren't really familiar with Sugar Space, you can rent the space out. You
absolutely
can lease it. You can do performances there. Tell us, you know, like, what do you have going on right now?
Yeah, so that's exactly right. So we're basically providing space and support for artists and arts-related events. So if you need a space for performance, if you need a space for rehearsal, workshop, class, want to do a gallery exhibit, host an event, a fundraiser, any of those kind of things, we are the place to do that. That's what we specialize in.
So you have a big parking lot, even though you're close to public transportation, so you could do, you know, some kind of festival style or something, you know, tented in the parking lot.
Absolutely. You could totally do that. We've thought about things like that. It would be a lot of fun. Patio performances, you know, small intimate patio performances. Once we get the 7,000 square foot, it'll have quite a large, you know, occupancy, which is nice. Right now we're focusing on the smaller ones at the new space because we've only got a portion of it open. But yes, that is the long-term goal. And Sugar Space, you know, has a high, let's say performing arts is mainly what we focus in, I would say. Although we definitely, you know, feature a lot of visual artists in our gallery, and we have people who do poetry readings and film screenings, and so it definitely covers all genres. And that being said, what happens when you have a space like that is you also just get the community interested. So then we end up hosting a lot of community events, private parties, comedy shows, different things. So we're definitely available for anybody, even if it's not specifically arts related.
Fundraisers for nonprofits, a great space for that.
Perfect. Yes.
You've got some sound equipment in there and things, so it's not like it's just a black box that you can actually, you know, come in. And how would somebody go about contacting you to?
So the best way is to send us an email, admin@thesugarspace.com, or call us at 385-202-5504 and leave us a message. So on, if you go to our website, thesugarspace.com, there's also an online inquiry form, there's pricing sheets, there's some pictures. You can find us on Facebook, where it's Sugar Space Studio for the Arts, and we'll post, you know, events, classes, workshops coming up. And if you join the mailing list, we do a newsletter once a month. We try not to bombard people, but we do say, okay, this is what's going on this month in case you want to participate in one of the performances and cool events that are happening.
Nice.
Yeah.
And there are actual classes that people can take if they're not yet a performer, but would like to and want to tap into that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So as opposed to a traditional, like, dance studio, for example, where I would go and hire the teachers, or a yoga studio, and say, okay, they're all hired by me. This is Sugar Space classes. So we don't do that at all.
Okay.
What happens is a teacher will say, I want to start a class. I need a space to host a class outside of a studio. And so they basically rent the space. They host their own class. We, you know, we post them on our website. But that's why you can find actually a really large diversity of things happening. And that's why things like join the newsletter are important, because
it might not be this month that something dazzles you, but, or catches
next
your eye, but
next
month or a month later, or maybe you'll see that something's not being offered
that
you want to offer. That's a great way to look at it.
Exactly. And a lot of people come from out of town. We get a lot of people on tour who want to stop in and do a workshop, things like that, that are monthly one-time events. So exactly. It's not like you're gonna
newsletter.
It's not like you're gonna be like, I know exactly what happens there, because this is what happens all the time.
There's no box we
there
can
is
put
no.
you in.
There's not
your
really.
Space really does so many different things that it's like that space. I love how it can be anything that the person wants it to be, whether it can be a tap dancing class or it can be you know, a whole performance art, installation, totally. You know, or visual art. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It could be a place for a wedding.
yes, it can. And we have had weddings. And, you know, we have had, you name it, we've had it, you know. Ariella Trapeze, comedy, film, like I said, you know, dance, music, installations, exhibits, fundraisers, I mean, really anything, weddings, everything, baptisms, bar mitzvahs,
wow.
quinceañeras, you know, you name it. So mainly it's arts related, but again, it's we rent by the hour. So if someone wanted to host an event and we're available, come.
That's great. And again, you said so close to downtown.
Right.
And such flexibility with the small spaces, the large spaces, the patio, the outside.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I love being in Sugar House, but I have to say, welcome to the neighborhood. The Slug offices
awesome.
Are here downtown. and there is a lot of art and creativity, and I can't wait to see what happens with this space. I'm hoping that we will also have some graffiti artists that listen and get a hold of you and
say,
I want
do.
That wall. I want part
please
of that wall.
Please do. Please
and,
do.
And again, sign painters, get a hold of her.
And we try to be really generous. I mean, if people donate, volunteer their time, hey, we are happy to donate the space for you to have an event there or something. You know, we like to really work together on that. So even though we can't necessarily pay by the hour, you know, definitely it's an exchange, and we appreciate people stepping up to do stuff like that. You know, we have applied, the 7,000 square foot warehouse, we're hoping to have ready in about 3 to 6 months. We've applied for a grant through the county, which we're waiting here, which I think we've got a good shot at, so I've been told, and so that would help us to renovate that space.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Because I love how this neighborhood's just kind of popping up out of nowhere, even though it's always been there and has all this historic background. So it's
right.
like the Granary Row, and now we're getting the River District.
Yeah.
And it's, you know,
it's interesting.
I can turn on the news and think, where is that place? Oh, it's in my backyard. I have no idea. So
yeah.
And I really appreciate, you know, especially having a young female businesswoman come in here and step up and say, I'm going to take a piece of this history and make it new and fun and exciting and get people down here. So thank you for, again, moving to the neighborhood and making people aware of your wonderful establishment. And we're very excited to support you and come down and visit the River District.
Well, thank you, Mariah. And thank you so much, Slug Magazine, because we really appreciate the press and just getting the word out. And we can't thank you guys enough for what you do. So
thank you
for listening as well.
For more information on the Sugar Space, upcoming classes and performances, and information about their new location, visit them online at thesugarspace.com. As always, thank you so much for listening to the Soundways from the Underground podcast. And for all things Slug Magazine, visit us online at slugmag.com. Next week, we're going to have a roundtable discussion about banned books concerning Banned Books Week. And we'd like to hear what some of your favorite books are that were once banned or came back from the dead, so to speak. We also want to know why they're special to you. You can either send an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Maroño, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and the technical design is by Kate Colgan. Next week, be sure to fire it up for Banned Books Week. We'll have a roundtable discussion with three leaders from the literature scene right here in Salt Lake City. Thanks for listening.